Welcome to Under the Influence, a podcast for navigating the complex world of disinformation, social media influence campaigns, information integrity, journalism, and the media. Good day. My name is Simon Wasserman. I am the director of the Center for Information Integrity in Africa, based at Stellenbosch University. Today, we're discussing the changes to Meta's moderation policy that were announced recently and the implications thereof for disinformation and information integrity on social media. Just as a reminder, last week, Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg announced a radical shift in the way Meta, the owners of Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and WhatsApp, how they will approach content moderation. It plans, among other moves, to eliminate fact checkers. For now, this is only in the US, and replace them with a system of community notes, where users can comment on or correct information posted by other users. This is a system similar to the one already used by X, or formerly known as Twitter. Meta will also make it more difficult for offending content to be removed, and the company will also relax restrictions on posts to do with sensitive topics like immigration and gender. So to discuss this move, I'm joined today by Kavisha Pillay, Executive Director of the Campaign on Digital Ethics, or CODE, and Kaylee Clifford, Deputy Chief Editor of Africa Check. Kaylee, can I start by asking you, what exactly did Mark Zuckerberg announce, and why has this announcement been so controversial?
Sure, thanks, Herman. So Zuckerberg announced that, as you said, starting in the US, Meta would end its third-party fact-checking program and move to a community notes model. And he cited concerns of censorship and political bias. But perhaps for those who aren't so familiar with the program, it was launched in 2016 to essentially help protect Facebook's users from false information. And at the time, it was seen as a strong step forward in encouraging accuracy online and just ensuring that people have a positive experience on Facebook and, of course, later Instagram and Threads. From what we could tell, the program was quite effective. There is research that indicates that putting labels on fact-checked content reduces belief in and sharing of false information. So from that point of view, the announcement did come as a bit of a shock, and I think it threatens to undo essentially a decade of progress in promoting accurate information online. But the other thing was that some of the claims in the announcement were not true, and that I think painted fact-checkers in quite an unfair light. So, for example, one of the things that he said was that fact-checkers have been too politically biased and that they have destroyed more trust than they've created. And this kind of suggests that fact-checkers are responsible for censorship. But in actual fact, Meta never gave us the ability or the authority to remove content or accounts. And all of the fact-checking partners had to meet really strict non-partisanship standards through verification by the IFCN or the International Fact-Checking Network. So from that point of view, it's also concerning. I mean, people online have often blamed and harassed fact-checkers for Meta's actions. And these comments certainly don't help the situation. I think they will fuel those perceptions and make not only the work of fact-checkers more difficult, but really anybody that's working in this space and that is interested in information integrity.
Okay, thank you, Kaylee. Kavisha, in your discussion of the announcement on your website, you called the move reckless and a dangerous gamble. So it seems like you think this is also a very bad move. Do you want to explain a little bit more why you call it reckless and dangerous?
Thanks, Herman. Yeah, I think what Zuckerberg and others are doing is reckless and dangerous on a number of fronts. And what we've seen over the years is that with Meta's existing content moderation policies, information that exists on their platforms have led to real-world harms, such as violence that was experienced in Myanmar and Tigray in Ethiopia, election interference in the US, Brazil, and India. But also during the pandemic, we saw how rampant disinformation was able to become so pervasive on all of these platforms. And this is why having fact checkers to be able to flag posts that are untrue or problematic is it, this is why it's so important to have that, because people who are using these platforms aren't public health experts, aren't potentially political experts. And where disinformation does thrive in these spaces, and on the scale that it does, having fact checkers there to be able to flag posts is extremely important in terms of preserving the information ecosystem that we all operate within. But fact checkers themselves were never going to be the silver bullet to the disinformation problem because of the algorithms which push information to the top of our feed. So be it true or be it false, if a lot of people are engaging with this, the algorithms will push this into our purview, and we are then engaging with this. And why this is dangerous is because the community node system that X has implemented at the time when Twitter, before Musk had bought X, when Twitter was investigating this, they wanted to use the community node system, but not to replace the current content moderation policies and fact checkers. It was meant to enhance their system so that there was a better, so that a user would be able to engage with information that was true and factual, and you would then be able to sift out the false information. When Musk came through, he did away with the content moderation policies and instead replaced that with a community node system, which studies have shown has been quite flawed in terms of being able to provide accurate information on posts. And that there's also biases that seem to sort of seep through on a community node system. So why I think that this is also dangerous is because they're basically gambling with our constructs of reality, where people are engaging and absorbing information that they're seeing online, and this is shaping their narratives about various things, be it politics or social issues or, et cetera. And where you're not able to differentiate fact from fiction, and where the fiction is very much profitable because people are able to profit off the lies and disinformation that they're putting out online, you're then shaping and skewing an individual's worldview because you're now creating this illusion that what you're seeing online is potentially true and fact and real. And again, the consequences of this, we've seen this playing out with increased polarization in our societies where there is a sort of shift towards right-wing populism emerging across the world. You're seeing this play out based on the types of information that people are consuming online, but also the echo chambers that we're locked into. And where you're not able to dispute this with actual fact by expert fact checkers who are saying that actually this information is not true, you're then pushing people further and further apart from each other, but also further apart from what is reality and what is truth and what is fact.
Thank you, Kibisha. So it sounds like you're suggesting that both of these systems should be operating together, that there's a place for community notes, but that shouldn't replace fact checking, if I understand correctly.
Definitely. So they're meant to enhance each other. So you could have a system of fact checking, you could have a system of community notes. Ultimately, the main goal would be to also be able to correct the algorithms that will always push forward sensational content to the top of our feeds. And there's a sort of collective approach to dealing with this because no one solution, no one approach would be the silver bullet to solve the missing disinformation epidemic that we're seeing online. So if you had a system where instead of replacing one with the other, but you had a more enhanced system where these community nodes work with fact checkers, there's also a better approach in terms of how algorithms are pushing information and so on, then you'd be able to say, okay, we have a much more reliable information ecosystem. But at the moment, what they've done is that they've actually regressed us and took us backwards. As Kaylee mentioned, there were some progressive steps that were being made to try and correct some of the wrongs that we were seeing online, but this is a step backwards.
Okay, thank you. That's very helpful. Kaylee, you're an experienced and professional fact checker. I was wondering, what is your opinion about the proposed community notes? Kavisha suggests that the two can enhance each other, sort of professional fact checking and community notes. I know that you've also been working at Africa Check, for instance, around WhatsApp, where you do engage the public to send on information for fact checkers to then fact check. So there is some engagement with public, and that the public is part of the process, but that fact checkers are still doing the ultimate fact checking. Is this a sort of system that you think can work with Facebook as well? Or what is your opinion about this community note system?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that could work for sure. It might be useful for listeners first to kind of understand what we mean when we say community notes, that this is a model that means anyone on the platform can submit a correction to a post and then it gets voted on by other users. So if enough people vote that, yes, this is a helpful correction, then it gets displayed under a post. What that means is that instead of a vetted organization that adheres to strict codes and principles, like the fact-checking organizations that were part of this program did, we are relying on ordinary users on the platform to correct false information and provide context. I'm not convinced that this type of program will result in a positive user experience, as I'm sure that anyone who has, experienced the changes on X over the last year will attest to. But also, as Kavisha says, I mean, there's research to show that this model is not working exactly as it should. There are community notes that don't get displayed because they depend on widespread political consensus rather than on standards and evidence for accuracy. But having said that, there is no reason why community notes couldn't exist with the third-party fact-checking program. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. And in fact, a community notes model that works in collaboration with professional fact-checking would actually have a strong, potential as a new model for promoting accurate information, because I think it addresses some of the more controversial aspects of the fact-checking program that can be viewed as a form of censorship, but also encourages regular users to become more involved in the activities that they participate in online.
Thank you. So the goal, in other words, is to engage the public, but also to have some sort of factual standard. Otherwise, if enough people say the earth is flat and people agree with it and vote it up, then that stands, right? So I was wondering also then what the political environment for this decision has been. Several critics have observed that this announcement came just as Donald Trump was about to take power in the US, and that the announcement was timed also to coincide with that. Kavisha, do you think this part of Big Tech's attempt now to curry favor with the new administration? Why are they doing this? Why now?
100%. I think there's been some interesting writing and analysis about what's going on in relation to the tech oligarchy, and some have deemed it the tech broligarchy that you're seeing in the States. And they've all essentially kissed the ring. And it was really concerning when you watch the inauguration in the speech and you saw the CEOs of these major tech companies sitting in the seats so close to the president, seats that were usually reserved for governors and sort of senior ranking members of both the Democratic and Republican parties. And what I think that was, from a public perception, what they were trying to show is that they have access and control to the most powerful man in the world, the leader of the United States. And before, what you'd see with companies and CEOs is that they would want to try and hide behind the scenes. They wouldn't want to be able to openly show that this is the level of persuasion and influence that we have over a president. But that sort of show of power, I think, was an indication to the rest of us that, we're not going to play behind the scenes. We are going to be working with the Trump administration. And I think that what you're seeing from there's a quid pro quo that's occurred between the Trump administration and the CEOs of tech companies. And either it's through money that's flowed into US politics at the moment, sort of billions have been sort of provided to prop up either candidate from the Democratic or Republican side. But the quid pro quo that you're seeing is, okay, why don't you reduce your content moderation rules? Why don't you say that all of this is for the purposes of free speech so that the base that Trump appeals to is now able to openly express themselves in ways that they couldn't do before. And in return, we're not going to regulate you. And that's why, one of the first executive orders that Trump had signed on his very first day was to remove the sort of regulations that Biden had set in place around AI. And all of these, tech CEOs that were there that day all have major stakes in artificial intelligence. They're all building their own artificial intelligence, which is part of their platforms. But they're also sort of signaling that we don't want to be controlled or regulated in any way. So in order to do that, we'll make sure that there's no rules for your supporters and you're able to say whatever you want to say, even if it's false, even if it's hateful, because we believe in free speech. So there's the quid pro quo that has happened. And ultimately, it's not just those who live in the US who are going to feel the impacts of what this means. It's the rest of us around the world. Already, we've started to see in South Africa's own elections in 2024, there was rampant disinformation that was flying around on Twitter, sorry, on X, and no way in which you could ensure that that platform was creating spaces for meaningful engagement and trying to reduce the amount of false information that was being produced by various political heads in the country. So I think the impacts are global, and I think it is it's a very difficult time for all of us who are on these spaces. And how do you navigate through this, knowing that you aren't potentially safe, and you more often than not are going to encounter disinformation? There's very little that one can do to hold these tech companies accountable because they feel that we're in their space, so we have to abide by their rules.
Okay, thank you. So, in other words, although this decision was made with the US in mind in the first place, South Africa and other parts of the global South aren't insulated from this. I was wondering, Kaylee, if from a fact checker's point of view, at this moment, the fact checking sort of rollback is limited to the US. But if this policy were to be extended to other parts of Facebook's market in the global South, what do you think are some of the particular problems that this would cause, especially for fact checkers like yourself?
Yeah, I mean that's the big question. It's difficult to say at the moment what things are going to look like come the end of the year when the rollback of this program is complete in the US. But what we do know is Meta has programs like this in more than 100 countries around the world, and all of them are very diverse and operate in very different contexts. And they're also at different stages of democracy and development. Some of them are highly vulnerable to false information that can potentially bring on political instability, election interference, even violence. I mean, Kavisha touched on that earlier. And so, if Meta decides to stop the program worldwide, it's almost certain to result in real-world harm in many places. Of course, the hope is that this doesn't happen. And as fact checkers, we certainly remain committed to working with Meta in using fact-checking as a tool that gives people the information that they need in order to make informed decisions. The opposite scenario and the risk that will be posed to people on social media otherwise is really very concerning.
So there's certainly a lot of cause for concern. It's clear that this move is something that should not be taken lightly. I wonder if both of you can maybe just reflect, sort of in closing, on what you think the impact of this move will be on ordinary users of social media platforms. How likely is this to increase the disinformation that people are going to encounter in their daily lives eventually? And maybe also, then, most importantly, how do people protect themselves from disinformation? Shall we start again with Kavisha and then Kaylee, maybe?
Yeah, I think for ordinary users, one can expect that there is going to be an increase of disinformation that you will experience online. Some will be things that you can be able to tell that, well, this is not necessarily true, but others will become a lot more difficult to be able to differentiate. And in the South African context and experience, there's key things that are happening politically around, for example, key bits of legislation related to the Bella Act, the National Health Insurance, and other issues that are of social importance, where you're already seeing very divisive and incorrect narratives emerging, narratives that actually aren't based in fact and truth. And without having digital literacy skills, I think it would then become very difficult for ordinary people to differentiate why they're being targeted with certain information, how why that information is appealing to those biases, how that information is sort of exploiting fears or sort of pre-existing stereotypes that they may have. And it means that what is at risk is the sort of social fabric of a community, because there is this idea, and not an idea, but truth is the central cornerstone of democracy. And when truth is now in question, when we aren't able to agree on basic things, I think it then starts to play out politically. And you're then seeing how fraught a country can become just with sort of social and political divisions, because we are now fighting each other on very basic things. So I think that the impacts are going to be quite harsh. And the way to potentially counter this is through digital literacy campaigns, where users of social media platforms are educated with skills and tools of how to, verify bits of information, how to understand why algorithms are pushing certain types of information to them, to be able to question their own echo chambers. I think that would be the sort of lowest hanging fruit in the first step. But I also think that, and this is a sort of contentious conversation among some people around starting to consider regulating spaces like social media and following the path of the European Union with the Digital Services Act, where there's now avenues for accountability to hold the sort of tech companies and platforms accountable for the information that exists online. Obviously, we need to think of progressive legislation where it will never then be used to curb freedom of expression, freedom of political expression, which is fundamental in sort of any democracy, but that those who are actively and intentionally creating and spreading disinformation, as well as the platforms that allow them to thrive, will face some sort of accountability. And I think those are the sort of bare minimums that we would need in order to try and at least make sure that our digital futures are safer. But it is a long road ahead in terms of trying to roll out nationwide digital literacy campaigns, but also trying to get governments to see the importance around regulation, but that they're not creating regulation that would then be used to hinder opposition parties or activists or journalists, etc.
Thanks, Kevisha. So a combination, in other words, of people empowering themselves, becoming more media literate, but then also some accountability and regulation measures. Kelly, would you agree with that position?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, most people on social media are looking for reliable information. They're looking to have healthy interactions with friends and family, and informing users about false information in order to slow its spread is really key to this. That's what the fact-checking program aimed to do. So without it, it is likely that we will see disinformation spread unchecked. And it does mean that ordinary users are going to have to be more careful on social media, even more so than they already are. And they will have to rely on their own media literacy skills, which, in any case, is a good thing to do. At Africa Check, we encourage people to ask themselves a set of key questions before sharing anything online. So it's things like, who wrote this message? Is it supported by several credible sources? What is the context? And importantly, what is the potential motive, right? So what might this information be trying to get me to do? And it's our sense that if users take the time to think about these questions, they'll be playing their part in stopping or at the very least slowing the spread of disinformation. But this isn't always an easy thing to do. It's potentially asking a lot, maybe too much, of ordinary social media users who may not have these skills at their disposal. And, you know, Kavisha has raised a lot of the more bigger picture questions. There's a lot of nuance around these conversations, and more often than not, the things that we come across on social media are not outright correct or incorrect. There's a lot of gray areas in between and a lot of context that needs to be unpacked. And so there, I think we're really going to have to, you know, it's going to be up to organizations like ours to work together and think a little bit more creatively about how we can address some of these challenges.
Thank you. Maybe just in closing, if there are listeners that feel maybe overwhelmed at this point and wondering where should they start by empowering themselves, where do you start with this sort of digital literacy? Can you point us maybe to some resources? Kelly, I know that at Africa Check you have also had programs around digital literacy. Could you maybe highlight some of these?
Yeah, certainly. So, I mean, if there are any listeners that are interested in learning about some of these things, we have a whole range of guides on our website, africacheck.org, that address everything from how to verify a voice note on WhatsApp to investigating the credibility of online news articles, conducting reverse image searches. And the aim with these is really to explain in very simple and understandable terms how ordinary social media users can protect themselves online. So I would definitely use those guides as a starting point.
Okay, thank you. And Kavisha, also on Code's website, there's also some very interesting and useful information as well about just also the bigger picture of big tech and society and big tech and politics. Anything you'd like to highlight from your side before we go?
Yeah, so I think what Code is also going to be rolling out digital literacy trainings in the year, and more information about that will be available on our website because this is such a key issue in terms of how we help people to stay safe online. And I think going to other organizations, for example, like Media Monitoring Africa also has really good resources in terms of how you can stay safe and where you can report disinformation. So there's a wealth of tools and sort of trainings that we have already. There's more that we need to be producing in order to be able to help people to manage with the onslaught of false information that they're likely to experience. But I think already some of our organizations have produced good work that will just sort of get you into the door of being able to understand why you're seeing the information that you're seeing, but also about how to become a more responsible digital citizen so that, you know, we verify news before we're sharing it. We know how to communicate online without sort of provoking tensions and so on. But yeah, those organizations seem to have some good resources and tools available, and I'm sure that more will become available as the year progresses and goes on.
Thank you very much to the both of you for the time you spent today to help us understand this move better. Thank you, Kavisha Pillay, Executive Director of the Campaign in Digital Ethics, or CODE, and Katie Clifford, Deputy Chief Editor of Africa Check. Please check out their websites, Africa Check and CODE. My name is Herman Wasserman from the Center for Information Integrity in Africa, and you can find us at CIIA.Africa, Stellenbosch University's website. Thank you very much for your time and all the best.